call the April 21st, 2025 Rogers Water Works Steer Commission meeting to order.
Thank you. We wouldn't call it order. Okay. Are you okay going forward? Okay. So we've called orders. The first item on our published agenda is the actual minutes from our March the 17th meeting. We sent out in our packet, entertain action on those.
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes as submitted.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carries to approve the March 17, 2025 minutes. The next area we're moving to is reports. The first is Jared with the financial reports.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
This will be our report for the month of March. Well, here we go. Billed revenue. We'll start with billed revenue and consumption for the water department. Billed revenue in total is up 9%. If you just look at the billed revenue associated with consumption, it's up 8%. With consumption itself, up 4%. And in the sewer department, billed revenue in total is up 12%. The portion of that related to consumption is up 7%, and consumption itself is up 4%. For our actuals versus budget, March is 9 months away for the fiscal year. So we use then for our high-level benchmark, 75%. And for the water department, both revenues and expenses are tracking over that benchmark, with revenues at 81%, expenses at 77%, and our capital outlay compared to budget at 38%. For the sewer department, revenues are trending over at 79%, expenses trending under at 73%, and the sewer capital outlay at 29% of budget. For our year-to-date income or loss, I've got some notes there. We'll come back to those, but we'll start down here with our tables. And today we'll start with sewer. We had net income for the month of March in the sewer department of $382,000. Now, if you look at your income statement, you'll see a bigger number there, and that's because we had about $550,000 as a disbursement from our ARPA grant. So I have included that in that $1.9 million sort of breakout figure there that you see at the bottom of that table. So in total, though, it adds up to $7.2 million, which if you look at our budgeted net income for the full fiscal year, well, we're getting close. We had budgeted just under $8 million, so that's about a $750,000 difference, $750,000 to go over the next 3 months before we hit our budgeted net income in the sewer department. So that feels pretty doable given our history there so far this fiscal year. And then coming up to the water department, this will require a little more explanation, but you can see our net income for the month of March is $42,000. That is a good bit less than what we have brought in so far this fiscal year each month. It's also less than what we brought in March of 2024. In total, the net income through these 9 months is $4.5 million. And relative to our budgeted net income, we are again pretty close. $4.8 million is what we had budgeted to bring in for the fiscal year. And so that's just about $310,000 away, again, with a quarter of the year still to get there. But you can see FY25 compared to FY24, these first 9 months of the fiscal year, we're tracking $8,000 less in total, that cumulative number. So each month I've been coming to you guys and telling you that billed revenue is up over last year. It's up, it's up, it's up. And that's true. But these numbers also tell you, or they allude to the fact that billed revenue is half of it. The other piece is the expenses, right? You net your revenues and expenses and you get income or loss. And so from this, we can gather that even though revenues are increasing year over year, so too are expenses, which can explain that decrease there. But for a little bit of explanation on why that's $42,000 this month instead of something closer to maybe the $300 or so that we have seen recently, I've added a few explanatory comments up here on the memo. Journal entries, we in accounting recorded a couple of journal entries this month. One was a catch-up entry for bad debt expense, and one was a true-up entry for depreciation expense. So each month we post a budgeted number for depreciation of our capital assets. But over the course of the year, as we actually make those capital outlays, we add those fixed assets to our fixed assets module in our financial accounting software. And then based on the useful life, we run depreciation in that fixed assets module. And that gives us an actual number for depreciation, to which we can true up what we have budgeted using the budgeted numbers on the general ledger. And so periodically, the idea is that we have that depreciation expense true up throughout the year. Ideally, it doesn't hit all at the end of the year, but we sort of spread it out a little bit. So impacts like this are not quite as significant when they do need to be posted. It's a similar story for bad debt expense. We bill customers. And when we bill customers, we record revenue and a receivable for that revenue, an asset. But it's also the case that we're not always going to collect 100% of that revenue. Some portion of it will be considered uncollectible, should be considered uncollectible. And we do pretty well, but still we need to maintain what we call an allowance for doubtful accounts. And the way that we do that is through a monthly entry to book bad debt expense, and then also maintain that allowance that goes against that receivable that we have for customers. Historically, we've posted about a $3,000 monthly entry for that. And at the end of last year, we realized that should really probably be closer to $17,000 a month so as to avoid a big year-end adjustment. Now, we get to a point where we missed that entry for 4 months, and it's $17,000 times 4 months, and that's $68,000 of bad debt expense that we need to record for both the water department and the sewer department. It's all a question of timing. The reality is we record this expense at some point throughout the fiscal year, and even though we're having to do this catch-up entry now, I'd still rather do it now for a few months than wait until June 30th and have to do a big true-up or catch-up entry for the whole year. So that's explaining part of the difference. The decrease, I guess, or the lower amount of net income in the water department for the month of March. I also noted just in studying the income statement that the field division in water had spent $125,000 more in March than they had in February. Most of that related to various repairs and maintenance expenses, as well as some various supplies. Again, it's no one thing that's really explaining it. The department's still fine. They're within budget. They're just spending the money that we've allotted them to spend. And then I also note there that water purchases increased in March compared to February, but because we bill in arrears, we haven't quite recognized all of those revenues for that corresponding consumption. If you add up these different items here and add that to the $42,000 that we did record for net income in the water department, it's $287,000, which gets you a whole lot closer to what you would normally expect to see for that monthly net income figure. So maybe TMI, but I just wanted to give you a little background on that. Any questions on that before I move on?
Yes.
Go for it.
And mine was really more on the bad debt expense. And so on that income statement and that GL account, 5850 had bad debt. It showed original budget of 35,000.
So that reflects the original historical entry of like $3,000 a month.
And mm-hmm. So that was my first question, was just it looked like, and then look in the audit for 23 and 24. And so we had 68, which was for our month.
No, 68 was the catch-up for 4 months.
But that was the month-to-date activity, but then the year-to-date activity showed 152,924.
Is that roughly 9 times 17,000?
I didn't go back in. I just, those are just the call-outs of the 68. And so you said the 68 was the catch-up, the 152, is that the 17?
That's 9 months at $17,000 more or less.
But we had only budgeted the 35, so that's...
That's correct. So we made this change, we made the change to our monthly entry after we had already budgeted. Of course, we do the budget this time of year, right? But then come year end is when we do all of our analysis for estimating that allowance for doubtful accounts. We realize it should probably be higher than what we budgeted. We made the adjustment recognizing that it would be more than what we budgeted, but I'd still prefer to go ahead and book that expense now rather than having to do a big year-end true-up at June 30th.
And we did that both water and sewer.
That's correct.
Because it showed up also in sewer. It just doesn't have the same impact on the sewer numbers.
You're right.
It did because it had higher. But that part of that's the two, of the 287, the 68,000 is bad debt for water, and the rest of it's going to be the true-up on depreciation. And then you have the 125. I just break
yeah, yeah, yeah. There's 68 there for bad debt expense. Of course, 17 I would have recorded anyway,
sure,
right?
Sure.
26,000 was the impact for the depreciation expense.
Okay.
So not much, but these things just sort of
add
together, right? Mm-hmm. 125 additional field expenses, and then I think water purchases. It was up 43,000 from the prior month.
That I'd go with the audit for 23 and 24 just to look at those numbers to see, because I guess I think 24 was 214,000. And is, so as far as a policy on bad debt, I mean, obviously we try to collect everything we can, but is there a point in time do we charge it off when it becomes uncollectible, or we charge it off per some sort of accounting policy?
We
continue to pursue that. So the policy says most accounting firms will tell you after a certain period you got to charge it off. So just a little bit, just want to kind of understand how we handle that.
I mean, the biggest tool we have at our disposal is cutting off somebody's water.
Absolutely.
And we do that very promptly. And you have a month, basically, to pay your bill, or else you're in danger of being cut off. And so that's a pretty big stick.
Absolutely.
Beyond that, we have Act 769, which if somebody leaves with an unpaid balance, if they open up an account at another Arkansas city, that's an avenue there that allows us to sort of track what they're doing and collect that unpaid balance before they can start service at another city in Arkansas. In terms of our practice for writing things off, we do write off everything older than 5 years.
Okay.
And so, you know, if we do this every year, then basically the oldest sixth year is going to be written off in its entirety each time.
So these would, in my mind, I'm thinking that these are a lot of individual accounts, or is it a lot of individual accounts, or one large commercial account? What, it just like a lot of money. And you say, if you look at
it's a lot of individual
214, because last year was 214,000 total.
Yeah, so I think
individuals.
I think that balance is somewhere around $250,000, both for water and sewer, at the end of last year, and that's basically 5 years. That's what wasn't written off. And so that's basically 5 years of unpaid balances. So if you just, I did a little math just to, I mean, if we bill $17 million in water over the course of a year, for example, $250,000 of uncollectible accounts, it's like 1.5%. And that's 5 years worth of unpaid amounts.
So have we been writing off debt in the past? This first time I've heard it.
We do the 5 year write-off every year.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do. And we maintain our allowance for doubtful accounts, that contra asset account that reduces your receivable asset. We maintain that with this monthly bad debt entry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's just sort of popping up here because we're trying to do it throughout the year rather than at the end of the year. And we had a catch up to do this time too. So.
Okay.
Well, if I continue on here, access and impact fee revenue is at $271,500 for the month of March. That gives us just over $2.6 million on the year, which is 84% of what we brought in total last year, and it's 121% of what we budgeted this year. And our cash reserves, I've provided you the breakout there for unrestricted and restricted cash reserves, but just to sum up, In total, between water and sewer, we're looking at a combined $55.4 million, and that's an increase of about $6.5 million compared to this time last year. And finally, our 12-month rolling average for lost water continues to hold steady at about 6%. That'll finish the report.
I'd just like to add, well, you're going into our, the way we've always done it, and Jared's not afraid to say, look, we need to change this, we need to change it now. What are the optics? Well, you could wait later, and he just wants to do it now. And the insurance one coming up later is the same type.
Well, you're right, through the pay now or pay later. And it's, yeah, especially depreciation, I mean, it's something that's non-cash. And you've still got,
right.
You've got that. And I was really, that number kind of hits, the 68 kind of jumped out, and then it had water and sewer, and it looked like the budget number is 35. So I knew somehow we just didn't get that budget number in there right. So.
Yep, we've got it penciled in for a better number for FY26.
So. No, that's good.
We're doing that right now. I didn't put that on the report here, but if, of course, we are in the middle of our FY26 budget process, and I expect that we'll be coming to you this time next month with a budget proposal and hopefully be done with that to give you a little bit of additional heads-up time to review that before we ask you to vote on it next time.
Well, I think consensus from folks up here is you just have to recognize it when you're supposed to recognize it, so it's good.
Okay.
Thank you for doing
that.
Thank you for the extra detail.
Thank you, Beth.
Sure. Next item, we have engineer reports.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
For development plan review, my colorful chart here, we have reviewed 149 sets of plans in March. The vast majority of time we spent on 14 site development plans and 8 unified development code public improvement plans. As I've said before, most of the large scales that we're seeing come through now are mostly record drawing plans, or we're reviewing the as-built sets. And there's our trend. So you can see we're trending about where we have the last few months, if not just a little bit more on average. On the project status for pre-design, we've got a meeting with a Trek design group to discuss some flow monitoring options for sanitary sewer, and this is the permanent flow monitoring stations I talked a little bit about last month. And so we're looking right now, we've collected some good data here in the last couple of weeks. I hope we've had our flow monitors or our level sensors out there. So level sensors have an ultrasonic sensor that just measures the and records the level of sewer inside the manhole. What we're looking at with this plan is to have a combination of ultrasonic and a radar that'll also measure the velocity. And so you can use those two metrics to calculate the actual flow inside the sewer. All the level sensors are doing right now is telling us if we're surcharging or overflowing or how full the pipe is. But that's going to give us some good data over the last couple of rain events that we've had in the last couple of weeks. And we've been moving those around to some of our suspected problem areas. So, but we are excited to put a plan together for sewer flow monitoring. We're still trying to work out a path forward with the city of Bentonville for the Mount Hebron interconnection and metering station. The initial idea was to jointly contract with the engineer to do this, and we got to thinking about this, and once it goes to construction, are there going to be two owners during the construction process, which is going to be problematic, and so, you know, we're looking at dropping back and having one city or the other lead that design effort, and so. That's being discussed, and hopefully we can move forward with that soon. We are under contract with Fries and Nichols for the sewer model update, and so we'll be kicking that off fairly soon. We're also under contract for Veterans Park and the sewer smoke testing. Smoke testing will probably occur sometime this summer when everything dries out.
Are you doing that by quadrant or citywide?
So the smoke testing area that we targeted this time are some of the areas that we had extensive tornado damage from last May, where we had some of the root balls turned up, and we kind of overlaid those with some areas of shallow sewer, and so there might be some issues underground that we don't know about. I know we had a couple of pretty expensive property claims from backups in some of those areas, and so we just want to find any other defects. Mm-hmm. And we also had some areas over here on the east side of town where we know we've got some capacity issues, where we're also doing some smoke testing.
Any questions on any of the status of you?
I've been talking about a lot of activity out at the Rogers Executive Airport, and they're in the process of putting together a master plan for expansion on the west side of the runway. They're looking to expand their hangars, and also looking to attract some possibly some manufacturing and some industry on this side of the runway. So one of the big challenges that they've identified is water and sewer capacity and our ability to serve that area. And so Brent and I gave a little presentation to their airport commission a couple of weeks ago, kind of outlining our status and some options that we're looking at. And we've really identified three options to better serve the airport area. You know, we've got a few connections that we can be made to loop in the water line down here around Hudson Street and 8th Street to kind of push more flow. But really, when you look at this map, the constriction is right in here, and we basically have two lines heading out that way. And so the other options we're looking at is we've met with Benton County Water District Number 1, and they have a line that goes here along Airport Loop Road that we could possibly meter off of them to supplement fire flow to the airport. Third option being is that Benton-Washington Regional Public Water Authority is nearing completion of a 54-inch a transmission main that goes from Beaver Lake all the way out to Gravette, Decatur, to serve that area. The first phase of that should be online this summer, and they've built a T and a valve stubbed out for us for emergency access, for emergency connection, and so we could possibly fast track a planned project bringing a larger diameter line down Highway 94 to connect to the north end of our system as an emergency connection. So we're evaluating all those options.
But I understand there's no sewer out there, right?
We have sewer adjacent to that site. I believe we actually ran sewer. We have a service out to the control tower out here. And as we stated to the airport commission, it's really going to depend on what wants to come in. If it's just a few airplane hangars with some restrooms that can be served with grinder pumps or a small public lift station, we'll probably be able to accommodate that. If they attract a large industrial customer, we're probably going to have some improvements that need to be made depending on what kind of capacity they're going to need. Any other questions? And last thing, we've got our GIS to the point where we went ahead and made a link on our homepage for public access. And I don't know if you've had a chance to explore this, but the GIS on that's available through the city's website is not up to date as far as the water and sewer goes. And so we keep this map updated on a daily basis. As soon as we get record drawings in, our GIS team usually has these maps updated within a couple of days. And I know between engineering and field operations, you know, we spend quite a bit of time answering customer calls from customers and plumbers about the location of water and sewer service lines and meters and things like that. And so using this, a customer can come in here and find their home and find the location of their water meter. And a plumber can locate the location of the lateral service line, and all this is kept up to date. So it's I think it'll be a benefit and hopefully save us a few calls. So
this updates on this. What is so much as I've seen on the one the GIS map and you go to the city website, it's not up to date. So why is it not kept up to date? But we can do this within a period of time, or when we update this, I'm just a little lost. Why don't they update that? That'd be a fair question, but I'm thinking it's a GIS. If we can do it, why isn't that one?
Aaron, you want to take that one?
There you go.
It's a GIS map. And right. I think I'd asked before is, you know, again, when you go to the city site, you can get down the utilities and you can drill down into this, but the accuracy is a question. So
the city of Rogers is not using the GIS that they're paying for right now. They're using an outdated version that has not been supported since probably 2005 or so. It's a free version, and that's what they've been using for quite a while. They should be switching over to the same kind of GIS that we have in the next, year or two. They're working on that right now.
Okay.
But that's why it's not as up-to-date as ours. What we've been doing is sending over shapefiles to the city. We send them over once a month. Yes, they're probably about 2 years out of date, but they just haven't swapped out the shape files with the new ones that we send them.
We kind of took the lead in developing a more robust GIS department, mainly because we were forced to. When we went to CityWorks, this was the foundation of everything we do through the electronic work order system. And so the city is just now starting that asset management system process. They're kind of where we were probably 3 years ago with CityWorks, and so just starting that process. But I would expect, within the next year or two, the city rolling out a much more robust and comprehensive GIS system.
Well, I have found at times I'll go to the Benton County sites is more user friendly than the Rogers site. You find where it's updated.
It's yeah. The
good
Benton,
work.
Benton County is very similar to this the system we use here.
Okay. Good work. Thank you.
Is there anywhere on this that we say this was updated, April 2025? I mean, just to kind of take credit for it, and just for somebody that kind of gives it a comfort that, hey, this is great information. It's up to date.
That's a really good question. We come in with the we agree that we take that liability off on that first page. That this may not be exactly right because it may not be.
Right.
This is to
okay.
the best of our ability, but please do not design. They need to do their due diligence.
Okay. So that's
a great question. We always make sure we have that.
Okay. Even the city's got the disclaimer, so it's, you know, very trustworthy. This is good. I mean, it's good work. I mean, it serves the purpose here.
That also shows proposed as well, right?
I believe we are showing the proposed, some of the proposed lines in here. So if a contractor is looking at working in an active construction site, yes, we have that as a, we can turn that layer on. It, default is not turned on, but let me find. I've got to have the aerials to navigate here. Or else it's hard for me to tell where I'm at. Okay. So I'll just zoom into. Yeah, it was just, so this is Poplar Street. So this is showing the ones highlighted in yellow, and the dashed lines are what's currently under construction. And so, and when the project's finished, these old lines will go away, and then the new lines will show up in dark blue. So
that's cool.
Good work.
All right, that's all I have.
Any questions in the report? We move into pollution control.
Good afternoon. The March, system, it ran really well. No real issues out there. Other than, we've been struggling with solids coming through. You can see a little bit of that on our dissolved solids coming out. We got a little bit more TSS out as far as the whole load goes. It doesn't show up much on the average, but whenever you look at the overall flow, it starts to. But we'll continue to struggle with that until probably summertime, just with our solids handling being at capacity. Not a whole lot going on the fog as far as big issues go. She's doing her monthly inspections. So get into that unless you have specific questions. SCP is still in violation, as you can see. Even OMP had a pretty good size failure this month. They had a broken diffuser or airline or something along those lines that caused them a significant amount of trouble, I believe, on this one. Work is still continuing on our solids handling upgrades. That line will probably be there until next December. Not this coming one, next one. Interestingly, and I included the letter, I had gave you guys the whole book on the 303D list, now that the new administration is kind of getting itself under our feet, they went ahead and approved the follow-on 303D list that had been in since 2022, and they just approved it as submitted, leaving off the Osage Creek sections. So now we're back to our existing proposed permit is probably still fine. They're back in that same management profile. It was a strange move. Typically, you have to have a plan, and they have to go do some extra things to make sure everything is kosher before they sign off on removing one. But in this case, they just said, well, it's been submitted and it meets the stuff, so, it's back to business as normal on the 303D list. So I don't know. I think they probably realized they were going to have trouble with that action that they took. There was just too many problems with it. We're still looking for a good time to take down that splitter box for our gate inspection. It may free itself before we get to it. I don't know. We keep checking and it's still not clear. But We did most significantly have a 15-year outstanding employee, Marco Segura, has been with us for ages, but his wife got a job in Dallas, and believe it or not, he chose his wife over the pollution control facility, so off he moved. We were all really sad to see him go, but we appreciate our HR department taking care of us and getting us a candidate ready to go, so we should be starting up training those here shortly. We ended up treating 315 million gallons in March on a, you know, a perfectly dry system. Probably should have treated around 280 million gallons, so about 36 million gallons of rainwater. Average daily flow then was 10.2. That includes 2 inches of rain over 6 events, which is pretty dry for March, which is usually about 3.5 inches. So obviously we've made up for it in April. For March it was fairly dry. I did include the letter here, but I did want to just draw your attention to this. Is we had previously talked about the 2020 list and highlighted this is a 2022 list just to alleviate confusion. And so if you have any questions about it, I'd be happy to answer them or anything else I've talked about, I guess.
Questions, comments, commissioners?
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, we have no old business. We'll move to new business. The first item under new business is renewal of property insurance.
Our current property insurance policy expires May 9th. And we are due for a renewal. This is a proposal for a one-year renewal. The commission at its February meeting agreed to waive competitive bidding for this renewal. Our agent is Rogers Insurance, and they source the insurance itself from Cincinnati Insurance, and we're in the middle of a three-year rate lock with Cincinnati. So that means the property rate is not changing, but what can change is our amount of coverage as well as the options that we select. So this is a summary sheet that shows you a couple of columns, one for our current coverage that's expiring next month, and one for the proposal next year. And at the top there, you can see the first thing that's changing is the amount of coverage. And that's going from about $131 million to about $136 million, an increase of about $5 million or roughly 4%. And that's mostly just an inflation factor that we penciled in there to try to keep up. We've tried to be a little bit more intentional as we've gone about this in assessing our property insurance. This comes on the heels of the tornadoes and the damage that we suffered last spring. It also comes on the heels of us taking actions to reduce our required minimum cash reserves. You know, the idea here is we're trying to assess our risks, assess the likely threats that face us, and then match those with our various safety nets, of which property insurance is one, right? So in these columns that you see here, I've highlighted in yellow for the current year what we selected and for the next year what we are proposing. And just to recap the current year, you can see we opted for the $10,000 deductible and $2 million worth of optional earthquake coverage. The combined premium totaled up just under $100,000. So this go around, we looked at that earthquake coverage a little stronger, a little more critically, and we've proposed here to increase that to $25 million worth of coverage. That is the max that Cincinnati Insurance will insure. This is considered an excluded peril, typically. So under our normal blanket coverage there at the top, this any damages incurred from earthquake wouldn't be covered, right? We've got to opt in to specific coverage for earthquake coverage. And you can see that going from $2 million worth of coverage to $25 million worth of coverage increases our premium for that selection from about $879 to almost $7,600, a roughly $7,000 increase, right? And so we've just, we thought about this in terms of the industry guidance, which says you should insure to your worst case scenario. And so we think about, what is our worst case scenario? It differs by threat, right? We know there's a fault line over on the eastern side of the state, which feels close, but also not in our backyard either, right? And so you just figure, well, what kind of damage might we incur from an earthquake? And then you look at where our assets are. And we were primarily looking at this from the lens of the pollution control facility, which arguably is where the most concentration of our assets are. Even there, it's kind of spread out a little bit, right? But probably the biggest concentration of our assets is there. So what kind of damage might we expect to incur at the pollution control facility from an earthquake? $2 million wouldn't go very far. But at the same time, it's hard for us to imagine sort of that doomsday scenario that would reduce the whole thing just to gravel, right? In all likelihood, our worst case scenario out there is not that, but it's something much more limited, something much more isolated. However, we felt that to address the possible risk of earthquake, it might be prudent to increase it from $2 million, which wouldn't really address much of anything, up to $25 million, which gives us a little more wiggle room in the event of some kind of property loss due to that kind of threat. So we're proposing that we do increase to, again, Cincinnati's max of $25 million, that coverage for earthquake, earthquake coverage. And we're sort of doing a trade-off here, because what we're not opting into this time is optional equipment breakdown coverage. Traditionally, that's been included in the quote that we've received from Rogers Insurance. We've never filed a claim, right? When we buy an expensive piece of machinery or equipment, maybe it comes with a one-year manufacturer's warranty that at times we may have used depending on the piece of equipment. But then after that, it's just an R&M expense. It's part of doing business. And as I said, I don't think we have any recollection here of ever filing a claim for that type of thing. We figure that if we do start filing claims, that premium's just going to go up anyway, and so we'll be paying for it one way or another, and then we'll have the administrative burden of filing claims along with it. So the idea from staff's perspective is that we treat property insurance as covering those things that would be a hardship for us to cover in the event that we had to, right? And so we've got this blanket coverage. We've got an increased limit for optional earthquake coverage. We're saying let's do away with the coverage we've never used before. You can see for the regular insurance, you know, at a $10,000 deductible, which is what we've historically done, it actually decreases if you take out that equipment breakdown coverage, right? $94,000 and change. So just bottom line numbers, we're looking at a $2,400 increase. And if you look at the bottom there, RWU staff recommends approval of property insurance renewal with Rogers Insurance for $94,545 with a $10,000 deductible and with optional earthquake coverage costing $7,588 for a combined premium of $102,133. This is $2,400 more than we paid last year. It gives us additional capacity in the event that we had earthquake damage. It does away with coverage we don't use. I feel like this is a pretty good balanced proposal that better addresses the likely threats and the likely uses of this kind of insurance.
Motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion to second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries to renew the property insurance with Rogers Insurance.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Jerry, out of curiosity,
yes,
how much has been paid out in this year from the insurance, tornado damage and all that?
Just
RWU.
We did the FEMA.
That's what I was thinking.
We had 25, and that's something too, that this was an interesting concept. I won't go into it. A tornado will do something here. We're covered with $130 million. But at the RPCF, that's essentially a storm shelter. So it's not going to hurt that. So the only thing that could is structural damage from an earthquake. So, but your FEMA only takes over after, over and above what you're already insured for. So that it stops at 25 is not a bad thing. If you have a disaster that's that type of disaster, you'll get some type of federal assistance, it's assumed.
But it's more prudent to do it than not to do it.
Yeah, yeah. It would be a tough. With your insurance agent going all through it again, that we simply hadn't done in a while. And the tornado and some other things, the minimum reserves are exactly the driver.
That'd be a hard question for you to answer if something did happen. Instead of you
yeah, we had that conversation.
At least you've got, again, it's just more prudent to do that. So I think it's well thought out, well done. So you've got the approval to move forward.
If we had a claim for the tornado, it doesn't come to mind. It wasn't very significant. The majority of what we got back was FEMA reimbursement.
Yeah.
And that is 75%.
We haven't really had significant claims in the past that I recall.
We really haven't.
Get something fried by lightning every once in a while.
We did get some money for the lean-to
shed.
We did get some money for that shed. I can't remember what it was.
I think it was valued at like $15,000. So.
And a windshield from one of the trucks.
Yeah. Getting value.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The next item is item number 2, is resolution 25-08, utility easement, Blossom Wave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a dispute about golf course restoration obligations over at the Lindsay Greens at Blossom Wave apartment complex. We anticipate litigation about that dispute. This resolution will let Brett be the organizational representative for the commission and RW for the litigation. He'll allow him to approve filings and documents that would be served in litigation, specifically claims that we would file and then defend against claims that Lindsay might file. So that's what this resolution is about. I'd be glad to answer any questions. I'll try to not comment about legal theories and specific things in the litigation, but I'd be glad to try to answer any questions.
I'll motion to approve.
I'll second.
Motion second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries to approve 25-08. And good luck.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's been cool without any issues.
Telling you, I've got golf course issues.
All right, next item is resolution 25-09, purchase of IT server.
Good afternoon.
Welcome.
So we have here we're looking to get 5 servers from Dell. And I have a short explanation of what we're thinking, what we're trying to do here. So what we have that we built when Janae was here is our virtualizing the office here. And the way we do that is we have a virtual host that hosts several virtual machines and then a second one, and they can replicate. And that way there's some kind of redundancy there. We're starting to do the same thing at the Rogers Pollution Control Facility. We have one virtual host out there, and we want to add on to that to get that redundancy there as well. And if you look here, as you know, we're in that big project to redeploy our SCADA in a way that is modernized and, you know, secure and optimized and all that, and virtualizing that piece is part of that as well. And right now there's nothing there. There's no server or system architecture. We're kind of building that from the ground up. So that's why we're looking at 5 servers. It's get virtualization in both the SCADA here in the city and then at the pollution control facility, and then we add that 5th one for redundancy in the office. We're looking to waive competitive bid. We have kind of a sweet discount through the city, through Dell. We tried with HP, they said no. We can't even get close, so we're looking to waive bidding to go with the Dell.
How long do these things last, typically?
They have a on paper 10 years, but they go 10 to 20 years, I would say.
Wow. I make a motion to approve.
Second.
Good motion, second. Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carries to approve the resolution 25-09 for social services. Well done. We've got one item left, and that is item number four, it's the purchase of lift station generators.
I apologize for not getting something into the packet, but I did put a little something together. We had, it's not really a bid, but it's through Sourcewell. So these are state items that come through each year. So Riggs Cat won again this year. They've been pretty consistent at keeping the generators. We have two different sites that we were looking for. We've got all the details there, but through the Sourcewell, we've got for Lakeview and for Biltmore. So $102,000 and $85,000, and that is pouring the concrete pad, installation, the transfer switches. The only thing that doesn't cover is for Black Hills to get gas, so the meter installation, which Biltmore did not even require one. So we're looking at a price there for through Sourcewell of $187,000 for the two different generators there for those sites. Part of the reason we want to go now is because it's going to take a little while to get it. These won't hit our books until next FY.
Okay, so I was going to say budget-wise, it's in this year, we put it in for next year.
Right, it was unbudgeted for this fiscal year.
Okay,
but it's not. When these come in, it'll be in the next fiscal year. We'll play the budget for want to get it before next
winter. Okay. So it's got a staff recommendation to approve generator purchases in the amount of $187,473.95.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Got a motion, second. Any further discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carries to purchase generators.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else, commissioners? Let's put in on future agendas, let's put that public forum piece in there. Just always have it in there. That way it covers if someone does something, wants to address this. That way anyone who would want to speak on the other side of that, it's got a fair game if we put it out there in public forum. And what that does is that allows us then to recognize anyone who wants to speak on any item that's not on the agenda, much like the city council does, and the mayor. And that way if we have a situation like today, we would be covered, we would not be on the agenda. If that's okay.
Large enough that, yes.
Yeah, I just think...
And that way it allows us, it gives us, we've fully disclosed anyone who wants to come and speak to the commission about any item not on the agenda, then we'll give them, I think it's what Lake City does, maybe 3 minutes, and Robert has some guidelines, but 3 minutes, that way we'll cover that, that way.
And I'd also just like to say, and Dana Daniel is here, his wife Marilyn, Dana retired Friday. But he didn't get to see you guys, so we wanted to come here.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
We want to thank him. He's been here since 2019. He's left a huge mark on RWU. Jennifer Hoffman is our newest. She'll do even better than Dana.
Well, thank you for everything.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
We're very blessed to have him for the time we did it, and wish him all the well. Everything in his future endeavors. Woodworking, deck building.
The list continues.
So, assume you have a list for him to work on, huh?
Yeah.
Good.
Yes.
Good.
We appreciate it so much.
Yes, thank you.
And with that, there's a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Second. All. We're adjourned. Thank you all. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.